And coming up next on the stream of Free Radio at freakradio.org, or perhaps the archives on the Huff website, it's the 24th of February, 2022 edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. This time we're looking at, or listening to, I should say, Life in Sausalito, actually a press conference around a journalist who got abused by the police. And coming up next on the stream of Free Radio at freakradio.org, or perhaps the archives on the Huff website, it's the 24th of February, 2022 edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. This time we're looking at, or listening to, I should say, Life in Sausalito, actually a press conference around a journalist who got abused by the police, and some of the consequences that ensued around the anchor outs, encampments in Marin Ship and elsewhere, and also a long interview with Wes White, who was there doing some videoing and indeed had a long video of the press conference where the lawsuit against the police officer or officers involved in the abuse of the journalist was announced. So let's jump in.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's begin with an interview with Wes White. I just did this interview, so it's kind of hot off the press, or hot off the mic, or hot off the phone. Wes is, well, it really gets introduced fairly well just by jumping into it, so here we go. Well, I'm on the line with activist Wes White, who's a mobile Union of the Homeless, I don't know, organizer, photojournalist, guy who keeps his pulse on, or his finger on the pulse of folks who are I don't know, in cold weather, they're having trouble keeping a pulse. It's pretty pretty cold up here in Santa Cruz and Felton, and I understand maybe cold where you are, Wes. How's the weather down there?
It is cold. I think it's been frosting a couple of nights here on the peninsula, and Salinas is still very cold, too. Yes, no, it's been whipping. But, you know, it's still warmer. It's still a warmer season than a lot of places, you know, a lot of years.
Well, that's good. I know it's below freezing here the last couple nights, so that's caused the opening of Brent Adams' warming center, which is good. He's actually had it open for the longest sustained period of time that I've been aware of, at least this winter, four days or four nights. But the reason I'm calling you, of course, is that you have posted a nearly hour-long video which is subtitled Police Brutality Civil Suit, Jeremy Porche. Do I have that name right?
Close enough. Porche, I think it is.
Porche versus Sergeant George and the Sausalito, California PD. And I liked the parts of the video. I was just skimming through it that I saw. Some of it's a little hard to hear, but I think you've gotten a lot better than, you know, in past videos, where you really have, it's paying more attention to the audio wording of it.
They also use my boombox. That's why I brought the PA.
Very good. I know you've done that before for Santa Cruz, and I appreciate that. Although I don't know how much we have to say, but I'm hoping there is that these folks have something to say. I wonder if you can give some of the background of this, which might not be covered in as much clarity and depth as you might cover it if you were kind of telling someone who really knows nothing about this and kind of, you know, give them some orientation. And then we can see if we can, I can run through the audio portion of the video and maybe, you know, people will understand it better.
Okay. Well, I guess this stems from an arrest that happened at an encampment, city-sanctioned, city-operated encampment, paid for, provided for, and they had security there and everything. Well, he was just documenting the experience of the day.
Let me interrupt you. Who is he? Who are you talking about?
Mr. Porche, Jeremy, the victim. So he was close to the officer, the sergeant. So I'm not sure if he was the lead in that moment. But the sergeant, I guess, attacked him. And, shoved him to the ground, and they only used one set of handcuffs, so his rotator cuff was displaced, and, he was held for 10 hours and released. His camera footage was confiscated and looked through, and when the charges were filed with the DA's office, DA refused to do anything about it, because he didn't feel there was enough evidence to compel. So those charges were dropped. Now they're doing a civil suit, because basically, it's just freedom of speech and, it was just, unprofessional conduct of the officer as well as targeting because, Jeremy is a person of color, black man with dreadlocks and, fierce advocate of the folks there at Marineship and, in documenting the...
Let me interrupt you for a minute here, Wes. Can you give a little background to... I've talked about it as well. I mean, I could as well, but you were actually on the scene with this, and you've been on the scene in more than once in Sausalito. Is that true?
Yes. 6 months ago or whatever, the end of June... Camp Cormorant was dispersed, and Jeremy was there for that one too. So they're very well aware of his presence and who he is, his mannerism and style. So when the police said that he attacked them, there's no way. And then of course the footage. They reviewed the footage and determined there was no case.
Now, Jeremy is he a photographer for a particular newspaper or online service, or is it he sort of an independent?
That is a very good question. I'm not exactly positive.
But he is an effect.
I do know that he's been out there for quite a while.
And he is
well over a year.
He is a reporter. And let me put it this way: has he covered Is he actually a part of the encampment? Is he somebody who comes in as a supporter for the encampment? Is he sort of a journalist who wants to keep an eye on what's going on and covers other events as well? What's your sense of that?
I think he does explain it in the video what exactly he does and how long he's been doing it. But I think he's been a journalist for over a decade and more or less documentary, you know, so a lot of that was intellectual property that, you know, wasn't necessarily meant to be published immediately. And I know that he's really good. You know, he was there in Nevada as well for Camp Compassion. You know, I followed a little bit, and then I'd see him there too. So that was pretty cool. You know, he's been really in it for a long time and very professional.
Well, let's turn now to the actual video. I mean, I suppose we could play it, and you could. We could stop it and you could comment on it, but it's a long video, and I don't know if I want to try to hold you on the phone.
Well, you know, that introduction with the lady there, I think she does a really good introduction to the whole thing, too, because she's been on the ground for a really long time. And so it's like the first 5 minutes, and, you know, she's much more, you know, day-to-day. You know.
This is the woman with the sunglasses and the dreads?
I don't know if she had dreads, but she's the very first one, yes. And I think she was wearing like a rainbow-colored sticker at least or something.
I think she's a little hard to hear, but let me see here. Let's try it here.
Because I'm an advocate.
Yeah, there's a lot of background noise, as you can hear.
Oh, I see. Okay, well, you know, I did the best I could. It's not like I could tell everybody to shoo.
No, it's okay. Who are the? Do you have any memory of who the principal characters were?
Like three officers of the police department, and Jeff Chase might have been there,
who's he?
Robbie Powelson was probably there.
Who's Jeff Chase?
Jeff is the dude that talks during the video as well.
Okay.
The guy that has a boat, and he's there on a constant basis, as well as Robbie Powelson. Who's the union chapter lead there?
Well, I think what I'm going to try to do is let me see if I mean, I'm sure they actually describe what's going on, because this is a press conference, more or less, no?
Well, it's just to file a lawsuit against the city, and I'm not sure maybe just only the city. And, you know, he does explain a little bit of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, basically that his rotator cuff was out of place. They should have used two handcuffs, you know, because he's a big man. And they only used one, which exacerbated those injuries.
But what was the original probable cause for arrest? What are they claiming he was doing that was against the law initially?
That's a good question as well. I didn't pay that close attention to it.
I mean,
arrest or trespassing or injury to the officer, I think, is what it was. But I'm not.
Obstructing an officer, you say?
Like injuring them?
Oh, injuring them. You know, was an officer injured in this? What kind of injury?
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. And
you still there?
Words in it, you know, without sound. That is in the pleading. So I can send you that. And you know, when you watch it, from my description, you know, he is in close proximity.
What does the officer claim was the injury?
You'd have to watch the thing or read the pleading.
Now, is this actually, is what I'm going to be playing actually show have a narrative by an officer or by one of the officer's advocates or by someone else about what happened that you remember?
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, in other words, the question I'm asking you, you're suggesting that perhaps the video may answer?
Of his experience and encounter, he does describe it.
He being who?
Well, I guess it makes it harder, but, you know,
who are you talking about? Wes.
Jeremy Porcheesi,
victim. Right, okay, the individual. So, was the, I take it, they're not charging the police officer with any kind of assault or any charges that might actually be appropriate considering what the officer did.
Correct.
And instead we get to wait 2 years for a civil lawsuit and maybe something will happen and the officer will simply, I'm asking questions you may not know the answers to, like, is this a lawsuit against the city? Is it a lawsuit against the officer? Is the officer going to be held personally responsible if the lawsuit is successful? Because my concern is often that these lawsuits, the city ends up just paying money and the officers keep doing whatever they're doing and don't really suffer any consequences.
That's been my feeling as well.
I mean, you've been a man behind the camera for quite a number of years, and also you've actually been a man in front of the camera dealing with officers. In fact, you are facing charges even now in Salinas, right?
Yes. That's actually one of the primary reasons I went up there, was to kind of, you know, make friends with the attorneys as well, and make better friends out of because I had only seen Jeremy just a week or two at a time when I was there over the summer and intermittently at point. So, you know, it was nice to make better friends with him and make connections with his attorneys, because hopefully they have a connection down here that we can use.
Now, do you have an attorney yourself that you have any confidence in your own case, which is what, obstructing an officer is the charge you're facing?
So far, I've been pleased. You know, I mean, we're just getting started. You know, I mean, it is aware that I want to take it to trial, mm-hmm. and we begin the jury and everything, and I made them aware that there's video footage of the event in question. So, you know, he made discovery for that when we had a hearing like a week ago or something, mm-hmm. and I'm set for trial on March 25 or March 26th.
And we're going to break this up with a little music. This is something from Roy Zimmerman, but I think it's being sung, it might be sung by Charlie King. That's who I'm thinking of. Let's listen in.
When we said no child left behind, the Army's what we had in mind. So we devised a standard test to tell the brightest and the whitest from the rest.
We're cutting luxuries like teachers, books, and tutors to make things easier for disadvantaged, underprivileged military recruiters. And you say, that's stupid.
That's really stupid.
You say, that's ignorant,
insane, and asinine.
And yes, it's stupid.
Stupid.
I said, you're right, it's stupid.
It's really, really stupid by intelligent design.
We won't let Grandma smoke a doob, so we sedate her through a tube. We've got to fight a war on drugs. We can't have Grandma walking around giving hugs.
And so we're cracking down on cancer-stricken stoners to save America for poor, defenseless pharmaceutical corporation owners.
And you say, that's stupid.
That's really stupid. You say, that's ignorant,
insane, and asinine.
And yes, it's stupid.
stupid.
You're right, it's stupid.
Yeah, you're right, it's stupid. It's really, really stupid by intelligent design.
Now global warming is a myth.
Enviro-Nazis bug us with.
We caused Kyoto discord.
Now only members of the board can afford to return to the ninth ward.
We drop the ball and make another bonehead call and pat each other on our backs and cut each other's income tax. Then we say oops and lose another 1,000 troops and call another photo op and drop another malaprop. And every time it looks like hell for us, it somehow works out well for us.
And you say that's stupid.
That's stupid.
That's really stupid.
That's really stupid.
Say that.
Ignorant, insane, and asinine.
Asinine. And yes, it's stupid.
Yes, it's stupid.
Right, it's stupid.
You're right, it's stupid. It's really, really stupid by intelligent design. It's dumber than a doorknob by intelligent design.
And I think that was Roy Zimmerman and some other folks, but I hope you liked it anyway, because I did. Back to Wes White now. And he was talking about his upcoming trial for essentially videoing the confrontation between the police authorities, or I guess it was deputies, in Monterey County and the Pajaro River homeless union.
Did you pull your time waiver, or have you waived time? Do you understand what I mean?
Did I waive time?
Yes.
Was that your question?
Yes.
I guess I'm not waiving time.
Good. I mean, I always advise people to take things directly.
No, I mean, we're on track. We're not taking anything back yet. So I would imagine that not waiving time would be in my favor.
Well, it's up to you. I mean, you can choose to waive time or not. Often attorneys will want you to waive time so they can fit you into their schedule and all that kind of shit.
Making sure it's a speedy trial.
Right. So is this a public defender, or this is a volunteer attorney, or this is you suddenly acquired a great amount of money and you're hiring a rich attorney, or you're a rich guy?
Oh, shit. I have no job, so I have a public defender.
What's his name or her name?
Skinner, at the moment, you know.
What is it?
There's always a rotation, and anybody could rotate in or out at any point.
Wonderful. And what's your reaction? I always have the most... I may be too harsh on these public defenders because they're usually, you know, engaging in impossible tasks, but it seems to me it's the 5 minutes in the hall usual approach with the public defenders. How are they treating you in Salinas?
So far. I did have a lengthy phone conference conversation with Mr. Skinner the first time. I need to reconnect with him to figure out, you know, the real plan because I haven't spoken to him since the last hearing. So, you know, figure out what is the real plan because, you know, also I kind of got a mastermind plan, so I need to make sure there's congruence with the other cases.
Now, to have an understanding of what went on, I was there right before you were arrested. This was, of course, an incident that happened last fall in the Pajaro River when the authorities were coming to remove, and did in fact remove, bodily campsites from people without giving them really any kind of adequate alternatives or protection in terms of, one would think, the Boise versus Martin protections, if there actually exist and aren't just some fantasy in the minds of, I don't know, me and you and somebody else.
I'm not even in Boise, yeah.
Yeah, and I heard that Boise was having...
I'm in Boise. We went there in November. Go ahead.
I heard... Say that again?
I said there was not a tent... anywhere in November when we went up to Boise in November.
So you actually visited Boise this winter?
Yes.
How did that happen? How did that come about?
I ended up going to Nampa. This gal up in Nampa, Idaho, invited me over. So, you know, we got the plane ticket and everything and place to stay. And, you know, why not? I can say no.
And I begin to remember that was the peculiarly named city, not Napa, but Nampa. I actually interviewed you or her, both of you, I think, about the whole situation. I've read an article. Actually, I've seen an article mentioned. I haven't read it recently about how there's a lawsuit now being filed in Boise to hopefully implement the Boise versus Martin decision. I haven't really. I guess I may look that up. Hopefully for either this show or the next one.
That would be good.
Yeah. So you're going back for jury trial on what day again?
March 25 or March 26. I'll have to look it up.
Is this going to be a trial in person, or are they going to try to Zoom you in?
We've all been in person so far, and they actually pretty well demand it at this point.
Mm-hmm.
But they won't let you video. You know, you realize you're not in the United States, or at least what they pretend they want you to believe, because right when you enter the door, it says, no photo, no camera. No recording without court permission. It's like what happened the First Amendment. It just went right out the window.
You know, what I suggest you do is what I did with... I was always making audio recordings of homeless trials and that of homeless supporters. And you have to... You can fill out a request for media coverage if you intend to broadcast it, or you can do one for personal use.
Oh yeah, no, I've turned in a media request multiple times, and I've been denied. I've only been accepted about two or three times.
Interesting. That would be, I think, a point of attack if you can find a sympathetic attorney who wants to, because one of the issues, I guess, that the homeless union, I think, it may have been described to me by attorney Anthony Prince in some of our initial encounters, since it's not the court process that's going to get you anywhere, usually. It is rather the publicity surrounding the court process and the organizing that happens coterminous with the court process that actually might get you somewhere. So that's a very important thing to somehow get a grip on if you ever can, if you see what I mean.
Another reason for it, because we definitely want to pack the courtroom if there is a trial. We're expecting that you know, the DA just goes, oh man, we ain't got a case, you know, and dismisses it in the interest of justice. That is the expectation.
Right, and the interest. This is not just you, but three other individuals two of whom were involved in the Pajaro River resistance, and the other woman who was fighting to be able to be in her vehicle at the seaside, the marina parking lot of the seaside supervisor, or the marina supervisor, or the Monterey County supervisor's parking lot. Yeah. I guess I should take this opportunity to ask you, because I haven't heard much from Monica Tone. The last I've heard, she was in the hospital with COVID. Have you heard anything about how she's doing?
She's recovering. She's not really on the messenger chat lately. You know, it takes a toll on people. You know, I mean, this is serious business. You know, they've been evicted continuously for the past couple months, and everybody's been split out. So you know, they're having a harder time of it.
You're talking about her, the group that she was leading, several dozen people, and I'm not sure how many people it ultimately became.
Yeah.
And they were you know, they were living in the Pajaro River, and then they were evicted, supposedly because of what was the excuse used by the game?
The river might flood.
The river might flood. Yeah. Well, of course, it happened in Santa Cruz, but I don't think. What's your estimate of how realistic an assessment that was?
I don't believe that, you know, people are welcome anywhere, and waterways has been the latest buzzword, just like fentanyl has been the latest buzzword But, you know, so they've been clearing everybody out the waterways. Well, waterways is one of the last vestiges of jurisdiction that's been hard to, you know, get a focus on, which is why they're now making it a big focus. So everybody out the waterways, and that was Monterey County's big deal. They only did it once last year, and they spent CARES money to do it, which is straight up illegal because specifically CARES money is not meant for sweeps, but they spent, you know, a couple hundred thousand on it. Or at least 125 and something else. So yeah, you know, that was last year, and then this last year, right now, the 5th of January turned out to be like the 14th or something, you know, after the November one that we blocked, and the judge actually blocked. So after that, we went to Watsonville City. They knocked us out in like over a weekend, but we were able to stay in a hotel for Christmas, New Year's, and then they were back out. They had to go to Santa Cruz County because there was already a fence around there where they were at, and then Santa Cruz County kicked them out in like 4 or 5 days, and then they go to local park, and they've been getting notices there, but it's like, you know what, dude, we're just going to go back to the river. And that's just kind of been, you know, and in Watsonville, even though they put them notice, they kind of just glazed over it, you know. So, but people are still stressed, and they still got to move and not be where the notice is. You know, it's killing people. And then plus, you know, they ain't got no money for food and clothes and, you know, like just basic amenities. So, and, you know, there's not like food not bombs around. It's very difficult.
What do you make of the in various cities in the North Bay? Robbie Paulson, of course, has been organizing around a lot of this in Sausalito, Nevada, Petaluma. I guess as far north as Santa Rosa, although I'm not sure what's going on up there. And of course over in Chico, there was organized resistance based upon the attack that there were the laws passed by the jurisdictions, whether it was the county or the city. I guess in Chico it was the city, and I think in Nevada it was the city. I don't know about Sausalito. That enforcement of a law, when given lack of shelter and the Boise versus Martin precedent, they were able to get at least for a period of time, injunctions. Why has that approach not been used essentially? Then it was done a little bit in Watsonville and Pajaro, but it wasn't done specifically around Watsonville. I'm just wondering what kind of ordinances were they using to drive people away in Watsonville?
Well, I'm going to tell you my opinion. Marin County is one of the most, well, it is, it's the most expensive county in California because it neighbors San Francisco. And, you know, so Sausalito, San Rafael, and Novato all are in Marin County, and San Rafael being the seat of it.
True.
You know, and so that in itself is the issue. Nevada wasn't doing anything, so counterintuitively, by trying to get rid of Camp Compassion, by us doing the lawsuit and then respecting the law, you know, Jason Ferris was actually get wood fencing, not lattice, and everybody, you know, everybody taken care of, and I guess closet, what do you call those, lockers, you know, outside storage, and then, and, you know, bathroom service, they got laundry credit, you know, I mean, and that I suppose is only for those 20 people specifically.
But
nobody else is allowed to go in, but at the same time, they can't enforce anything anywhere else on public property. So, you know, everybody else at the other park. Because there's a large conglomerate.
Let me get you to pause here and ask you: are you saying that if there could be no enforcement on public property in Marin County, is that what you're saying against
in Novato City?
So that's because of an injunction that was secured by Anthony Prince, correct?
Correct. Yes.
Well, why can't such an injunction be secured in Watsonville in the same way?
I would imagine because the administration is not as cooperative.
the administration is not as cooperative. I don't imagine the Novato administration is trying to cooperate either. I mean, is it a function of the...
Well, you know, what's weird about that there again, see, the public community buy-in. Jason Saris was able to create a Facebook group called North Bay Unhoused Movement, and he cajoled a good couple thousand people to be sympathetic toward Camp Compassion.
That's in Novato. Yeah.
Farmers Market. They did a lot of good selling on their part, and I think that is a big, you know, they were allowed a stage. They were allowed space. They were allowed.
Well, in other words, it wasn't the injunction that did the trick so much?
Oh, yes, absolutely. The injunction put all the egg on the face. But, you know, it redirected the city to do better, and the city chose to do better.
Well, has the...
Because there's too many people paying attention.
Is the injunction still in force?
At this point, yes.
Well, then
in Novato City...
Right, but that being the case, if the Pajaro people could get an injunction in Watsonville, they would certainly put Watsonville in a position where they in Monterey County would have to some extent, or at least Watsonville side of Monterey County, would have to agree to leave them alone, or else become reconciled to having them on the streets of Watsonville, right?
Right. Well, that stands to reason.
But the question then is, what would prevent activists or an interested attorney or the Union of the Homeless, if they want to hire additional attorneys, because Anthony Prince may be overburdened, to come and actually help do such a thing in Watsonville? Why do you think this isn't happening? I mean, I know there are lots of places with that, and there are lots of holes in the dike and very few fingers to plug up the holes, but still... what's the difference? You think the difference is that there was, I don't know, what's the difference between Watsonville and...
I feel like the city administration was up against the wall, and instead of fighting and denying, they accepted.
But it was the fact that, now I'm asking, why wasn't an injunction tried? Because you didn't get the city to accept until an injunction came into force, correct?
Right. Well, and the only thing we got out of that was a week of a hotel.
Well, I'm talking about, but the injunction got dispersed. The injunction was not dispersed in Novato, and it wasn't because the administration said, oh, it's okay, don't worry, we'll be happy not to have the injunction dispersed. I don't believe that.
Oh, no, well, I don't think it was like that at all. I mean, you know, you're
yeah.
holding them.
Well, that being the case, you know, it's
we're,
not because...
We're definitely holding them hostage, but, you know, they're also accepting to be held.
Right, well, that's...
They're not running.
Well, aren't they challenging the injunction in Novato?
Yes, legally, yes. But
well, then that's... I know, I think I always, you know, I whenever you... And this is a sort of a difference between the two of us. You're often, you know, hopeful of getting the compassionate hearts of the community's leaders. In this case, they're political hacks who are running the political machine to, turn a sympathetic ear because there's such reasonable arguments get presented to them, you know. I think that's horseshit. But nonetheless, I understand it and I sympathize that that's... You keep wondering, what the hell else can you do? But obviously, the other thing you can do is try to use different kinds of force. The force of public opinion, the force of an injunction, the force of mass protest, all these things, you know, the force of truckers circulating trucks around, all kinds of forces can be used to attempt to pressure political results. And often a variety of these, a whole bunch of these things in you know, parallel or in conjunction can work to do this. But I keep asking you this question, why not try in Watsonville? And you say, well, the city isn't sympathetic. That has nothing to do with it. It's not the city. It's whether you have the legal power to do it. And I guess I don't understand, you know, I mean, people, you know, there's, I definitely agree with you that it looks like the North Bay has a lot more, high profile, outspoken, energetic, homeless activists up there, but you're not exactly sleeping on the job there, Wes. You know, and the Union of the Homeless, Anthony Prince came in and tried to help, and he did get an injunction for about a week. You know,
right.
and then he backed off. And I'm just wondering, what are the differences between Novato and Watsonville, legalistically speaking, or do you have any sense of that?
No, that's more a legal question, I suppose. I don't know. Presence, I suppose, could be a factor.
Mm-hmm.
For community support, our mutual aid did really well, but it also got a lot worse backlash. Not as much support from the community, the house community that drove by and said, "Oh my God," so the receptiveness wasn't there. That attitude was more or less centered in a group MMR, Marin something. Could be what you want to call a little bit more farther right than they should be. So that whole attitude, I think, was why the administration is trying to be anti. We don't want to be like those people. So we need to at least own up and realize that we have nothing. We're offering nothing. So we need to offer something.
So you think Novato and perhaps Sausalito and perhaps, I don't know about San Rafael, I guess they put up some token encampment that didn't really sit too well with Saras and Robbie Powelson, the two homeless activists.
No, well, it's an internment camp, they got this group, like a security babysitter thing. They're all ex-felons, so, they actually have, better than you attitude, chip on their shoulder because they're getting paid to take care of and watch you, and so there's all a constant cop movement there as well.
Have you visited this camp, by the way?
Yeah, I went there on Monday. I went to both the fenced-in Camp Compassion and the Marine Ship one. They were on a set of sewage and that was likely unknown.
So Camp Compassion,
they were all forced to be inside this fence.
Camp Compassion is in Novato, and then closer to the San Francisco area in Sausalito, across the bay, is the Marin Ship.
Marin Ship and Camp Cormorant Revival.
And what is there? Does San Rafael Camp have a name? Because that's between the two cities of Sausalito and.
That would be like the Fifth Street, Fifth Street Bridge, because that it's under the 101, highway.
And have you been there as well?
I went by there, but you cannot go in there. Everything is police regulated there. The other place, I'm still trying to think of the name, but that's just regulated. But there's police regulation at the other one because it's a city.
The other one being in San Rafael, or
Officer Lynn Murphy and friends.
Now, are there two camps in San Rafael or one?
The only one that I'm aware of is the one under the bridge.
That's the Fifth Street one, regulated by the cops, is what you're saying.
Yes.
Fifth Avenue, Fifth Street. And before we pursue San Rafael and North Marin further, here's a communication seminar by Rick Burkhart.
Said I'm taking a communication seminar so I can learn effective ways to get my meaning through. I'm supposed to practice on an unsuspecting layperson, so please don't be alarmed if I communicate with you. I said I may not be the neophyte you need, for I myself am now enrolled in a communications course. I've just attained the rank of upper intermediate, so my communication may be more advanced than yours. He said perhaps you've tried my guru's revolutionary 12 steps to communication as seen on TV, whereby until I get my green belt in communication, every conversation has a cashback guarantee. I said, well, I prefer to learn communication from a bona fide professional, what you might call a pro. The book that I use is called Talk Your Way to Fortune, which recommends, with these no-frills communication skills, you'll soon attain your business goals and ace your interviews to your own ends. You'll mesmerize your friends with your newfound Herculean ability to schmooze. I said my personal communication trainer is an ex-interrogation expert from the CIA, touring the circuit with his smash self-help bestseller titled Six Communication Skills from Guantanamo Bay. said a large part of my turbo-powered business plan is scoping out new markets for communications skills. That's why I got this book called How to Talk to Liberals. But after reading half of it, I probably never will. I said, that's fascinating, not so much to me. Of course, to me, communication comes from very deep within. That's why I'm managing this dialogue through body language. Most of what I'm saying now, I'm saying with my chin. He said, your backwoodsy colloquial expressions might distract you from the eloquently crafted turns of phrase, by which I effortlessly steer this conversation towards a point where you agree with things I never even say. With these techniques, in under 30 weeks, in every disagreement, you'll get your way guaranteed. You'll see through lies, you'll never compromise, and every day you'll make new friends, which every day you'll need. Yes, this may be the last book that you'll ever have to read. Of ideal communication is the way it differentiates us from a mere machine, which is what I've been doing throughout this conversation ever since we started networking. Well, you know what I mean. I said, well, listen, I'm just speaking hypothetically. You know how in that movie where the evil robot talks? He says, oh, right, it has that thing where there's this screen or something scrolling all its choices what to say inside some box. I'm like, well, right, that was before he was the governor. I guess it's just the point was that it's just, I mean, oh, shit. I must have lost my train of weight. And he's like, yeah, but oh, excuse me, were you? What? And he's like, oh, my God, that's it. So I'm like, what? And he's like, we just can't communicate. And I'm like, yeah, well, bummer if that's harshing on your buzz. Like, unlike some of us, at least you get your money back. So don't, you know, like, have some major cow. And he, like, does. Like, he's all totally, like, he's all got it going on. And I'm, like, going totally, like, yeah, I mean, hello. Cause it's like, I'm like, he's, like, so not got it going on. And I'm like, oh, whatever, dude. And he's just all like, whoa. Like, oh, my God, he's, like, all freaking out and everything, and I'm like, oh, nuh-uh and stuff, and he's like, oh, yeah, huh? It's like, it's so, like, just, I mean, so how it goes is like, you know, it's just, I mean, so, like, come on, it's just like, duh, and well, you know, I mean, like, well, you know, like, I'm like, this is so, like, and he's like, all okay, and oh my God, it's totally like, not, and he's like, all no way, and crap, and I'm, you know, like, way, and he's like, all no way, and crap, and I'm, you know, like, way. And he's like, oh, no way. And crap, and I'm, you know, like, way.
Well, I like the lyrics to that one. Dissonant chords were a little hard for me to stomach, but maybe you did better. Back to Wes White's analysis, and kind of the precursor to the audio you're going to hear next. So, well, check it out. But these other camps.
They were a while back. I don't know if they are now. But we didn't go inside because we didn't know anyone, and we were kind of scared too because I didn't want to get out the car, and I, you know, so.
And in case you've forgotten, Wes is talking about the San Rafael Fifth Avenue or Fifth Street encampment, which was policed by I don't know. He described them as ex-felons or ex-cons. I know a lot of ex-cons and. It's not so fearsome a label anymore, but here we go.
Reed had never been there before, and I don't know. Just didn't make time to actually stop and jump out. It was so early in the morning.
Now, what we're going to be looking at, this press conference that I originally called you about, is about bad police behavior at the campground in Sausalito, the Marine Ship Camp, correct?
Yes.
And... before I get back to that, and I guess I'll probably be just winding up this conversation and just trying to play the audio, and although some of it's going to be a little hard to hear, but most of it sounded good. are audible anyway, because I'm a, you know, audio rather than video guy. It's easier when you're looking at someone on the video to hear them, even if there's, you know, less, if it's harder to hear, but you can see them talking. That can be helpful. And that's, I'm going to encourage people to go to the John Doe 13K video, which is titled Police Brutality Civil Suit, Jeremy Porche versus Sergeant Georgia and the Sausalito, California PD. And they can, you know, they can watch it as well as hear it. But you're giving, I guess, you're, anything you want to give me more regarding this video that would be useful to know as you're listening to the audio of, of this.
Well, everyone who speaks has been very well involved for a long time. You know, everyone who showed up was, they also signed, there was 1,800 signatures to, I think, get Sergeant Georges fired, because this isn't the first time, and it illustrates an awful lot about systemic racism in there as well. I don't know. I was impressed. You know, I thought it was very well done and very well received. And everybody who was there has a lot of energy and passion into helping these folks, which was beautiful to see. I wish I had that kind of, you know, welling of support and finances and words and voice. Because those folks, even though they were just the audience, They've been highly supportive of the folks that were in ship. Everybody who doesn't live there, because that's always the bigger frustration, is everyone being attacked outside and inside Marine ship by the police. And that's why they've been constantly videoing, because they're constantly harassed. They just don't, the Sausalito just does not want them there.
Do you think that the proximity of Sausalito, which is right across the bay from San Francisco, has had any impact on the ability of the broader activist community to become supportive, or is it largely a very closely knit native situation, unique to and springing from directly Sausalito and the areas that are north of the bay? You follow my question?
Well, I'm not sure exactly how to answer that.
Hmm.
The support there in Sausalito is pretty localized, but it's very vocal, very strong, and passionate. I think they, you know, because you probably saw that they had donated wood for not having to live in a tent, but an actual structure. And so the plywood and the 2x4s, they made a couple of buildings, and the city came and red tagged them right away. And, you know, they provide subservice, so people have been providing those services. A couple of businesses, too, and some free food and whatnot. But it's been a lot of love out there.
Any
mostly localized.
Do you have any comments on jumping now to Nevada that you say you visited recently?
Yeah. Well, you know, the camp was tighter together, so, you know, too many people in too small an area would be an argument. But the security guard even came by, two of them. They walk as a pair, but they know they're not allowed to enter inside the premises. So, you know, Jason or someone else has to come to the door, like, you know. So that's been cool. They just waved high while they walked by. And, you know, I mean, the porta potty was only being serviced twice a week, and now three times a week. So I suppose that's sufficient. I asked if more or not.
How many people does the porta potty serve in that camp?
Well, there are two porta potties. One's you know, handicapped, and the other one. And then there's also a security guard porta potty, which, you know, could be available for use. But
how many people are in the camp?
About 20, and they had charging stations. Like San Rafael's got charging stations as well.
Mm-hmm. And
that's an amenity, huh?
Okay. Can you invite visitors in?
Yes, Camp Compassion. You know, the only people that are not invited is police and security.
And there's no pat-downs. You're allowed, if you need to carry a weapon, for example?
Correct. No. There's free ingress, egress, as well as marine ship for the most part, I think. I never was approached by the team. Still trying to remember the security guards' names, from what I hear, they get paid. They get paid to treat other people worse than they would like to be treated. So that was
How is discipline handled within Novato's Camp Compassion in terms of if there's somebody?
I don't even think. Yeah, no. It's just been like an apartment complex. How much regulation is there?
I mean, what do you do if somebody is acting up? Do you have any sense of what they do to deal with it? I mean, if someone's
he didn't mention anything about ill will or people having issues, like arguing or fighting or any of that. It seemed like Camp Compassion. They've come a long way. It's been the same set of people, I think they have a real positive rapport with each other and have already, done most of their dynamics. I mean, there is some bench area too, so community area, kitchen, and people can kick it. Mama Tigris from San Rafael, they under the bridge, 4th Street, now 5th Street, she's over there too. So there's a lot of love over there. So regulating comes with communication.
We're talking about Novato or about San Rafael?
Novato Camp Compassion.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean,
is definitely in disarray.
I mean, I'm asking you because problems always develop in any community. It can happen, and the question is how is it resolved? It doesn't mean you have to have a formal process, but usually there's a way it gets resolved. The people get together and say, "Get the fuck out of here until you can calm down." Or here we'll hug you until you feel better, here go smoke a joint, or go see a movie, or no, you can't shoot up publicly in this particular part of the camp because there are three children looking over there, that sort of thing. So, in other words, there usually is some practice that people in various camps use to deal with behaviors that, you can't assault this woman. Sorry, it's not appropriate, or this man for that reason. This is an issue that's come up, and of course, it's probably far more prevalent. There are far more instances of it. I don't know if it's more prevalent in the Benchland San Lorenzo campground because there's hundreds of people there and they keep shoving more people in, So, but I'm wondering if there's any mechanism or have you heard of anything about how it sounds like you're giving me the rosy side of it, which I'm glad to hear.
Well, I didn't ask. And I suppose so. That's
how
come I don't really have an answer for you.
That's okay. Next time you better ask, or else I'll embarrass you again.
Okay.
There we go. I guess what I'm going to do is try to turn to the video and see what I can draw from it. Anything you want to add that you think I should be aware of that's happening in Salinas and Monterey and Watsonville and the area that you've been spending? Because you've been spending time up north, too. I mean,
Salinas is about to do some health and safety days. They're rebranding their term all the time.
Who is about to do this?
Day on March 1.
Who is about
to? I got to be there for that.
Who is about to do this?
The city of Salinas.
Thank you. And so you're going to be Pig Latin for clean up sweep the camps and drive everybody away or to other spots.
There you go. Well, supposedly they're supposed to be allowed to come back, but you have to have all your stuff gone. I don't know if they'll help you move, but it wasn't stated that they would help you move.
Mm-hmm.
Especially to move intact, undamaged. Mm-hmm. Because how people are, they'll drag everything and there you go, everything's broken. So, and that's what concerns me. And then, of course, why even move people, especially if they're not even making a mess? You know, it's just to run your tractor and get paid to, you know, treat other people worse.
Well, now, hang on a second. A year ago, you were telling me that the whole new Salinas City Council was really a bunch of really listening, caring people who were going to change the face of this whole thing. And what happened with that?
They are doing what they can, but you know the admin is more powerful than anybody else. And as long as you can make words stick, you know you have to counter the argument. Plus, you have to have proof. So, you know, they're inching their way. You know, supposedly people are you know going to be able to move back to these places, and of course they'll be all that much cleaner. You know, and I was just telling them that they should be buying replacement equipment, and of course, running water and electricity need to be done, laundry, shower, you know, and food, and oven.
And what areas are they planning to clear?
Right now, they're going to get the hillside, which is right next to Wheeler's, on Caltrans property, which just doesn't make any sense to me either. But I don't know what exactly that is. Supposedly, they're supposed to be working closer with other jurisdictions to preempt, and maybe this is why they're doing Caltrans. You know, that's their collaboration. Here, we'll take care of it for you. Most of the folks have been already placed into Project Room Key, so there's hardly anybody out there. Everybody who wanted to go in went in. They're holding true to their word on that.
What would you estimate is the population outside compared with the population of people in Room Key? And Room Key is still a temporary program, is it not? Or am I wrong? Is this suddenly become...
No, it is a bite your fingernail to the quick. Will they, won't they, can renew funding? Absolutely. So, no, this is temporary. It should go for the fiscal year at least until June. And then, run it again.
So how many people would you estimate are in Room Key compared with those who are still, who you would call outside?
Right. I think they're probably getting closer to a couple hundred people now that are enrolled in their Room Key program. And a lot of those folks have to go to Marina, which sucks because they're in Salinas. But, then there's still probably another 1,200 people outside.
So it's a relatively small percentage of those who are in need who are getting actual Room Key access.
Correct. Oh, and everybody is well aware of that, too, which I think is another reason why they've been softening up somewhat. You know, they do admit that they, you know, even Megan Hunter will admit that, you know, they have further to go. You know, and these are baby steps or whatever, and you know, yeah. I mean, at least they could be doing a lot better still, and you know, you shouldn't be damaging people's things to begin with. I mean, if you tend ground, you know, everybody. And then they said, oh well, what about the ones that have all the bicycles and carriages? You know, the baby carriages, and it's like, you know, people have a trade. And unless you can prove those things are stolen, you have to assume they're not.
And I guess I'm going to leave it here, unless there's more you want to say, Wes. I'm not sure how far I'm going to get into your video, but I will suggest people look at it. And thank you for calling me the last time you came to town, by the way. I'm sorry I was in a groggy mood there.
Yeah, well, it would have been nice, but, you know, happenstance. So, just one of those things.
Try again.
Yeah, exactly. That's all we can do.
All right.
You know, we'll get it better. I mean, that's practice makes perfect. And, you know, I'm actually getting pulled into this thing with Creek Bridge, this thing Creek Bridge United, which is another NIMBY-type attitude beginning origin anyway.
What is
They were completely against the Sheriff Center. In their neighborhood, with the Sheriff's Center being 100-something-plus bed building facility for folks, you know, who used to be unhoused. Supposedly, that's supposed to be transitionary housing, too. But over half of those people have been there over half a year. And, you know, they have no plans, intention to move them from there yet. They've moved 25% of people, and they expect to move 25% in 3 months. But, that still leaves half the people there permanently.
This is all in Salinas.
The housing unit is not.
This is all in Salinas, right?
Yes. Yeah, so, you know, the neighbors are still concerned because they see proliferation of tent. They don't really realize that the city drove them out of where they couldn't see them into where they can see them. So, you know, hopefully that ends up being, you know, something I'm invited to, because this is something on Next Door, and for anyone on Next Door to even be interested in trying to include me is phenomenal.
All I say is keep your crucifix around your neck at all times. You never can tell when somebody may be biting you.
There you go. Well, you know, the Creek Bridge United, I was actually, you know, heavily involved in just listening and maybe even debunking, you know, some of the issues. And, you know, let's get at the real root cause of what you're mad about.
And you'll be posting some stuff around this?
Because of it. I'm sorry?
I say you'll be posting some stuff around this?
Well, if I ever get any information about it, I just heard about it a little bit ago. But people are frustrated. They don't want to see tent get anywhere closer to their house.
So you haven't been videoing this?
No. There's too much that happens, and I don't really get told about everything. So the waterways, they cleared everybody out the waterways, you know, for behind Safeway, Nativity Creek, and on the way down to the Sheriff's Center. So they drove everybody out from where you can't see them. And so, of course, people said, well, then I guess I got to go over there.
How many people were impacted?
I see about 30 tents.
I gotcha. Have you talked to any of the people in the tents?
No, I haven't gone out there lately.
Okay. Well, I'm going to leave it at that. And I'll, if you got more news, call and we'll pick it up.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
All right, man. Stay strong.
Hey, you take care, man.
Smiling face,
una sonrisa,
outstretched hands,
extendida,
through disputes, small and grand,
pequeñas y grandes,
we will say,
dejaremos
down our guns,
nuestras armas.
We must. In the rain,
en la rabia,
through the war,
por la guerra,
we have shared. We are one in the soft
of
in the birth of a child, through the fear and the mind in our daughter and our son.
And all of these songs are from the album For the Record by the Prince Mishkins, Karen Brandow, and Charlie King. I think some of them are sung, although it's not clear from the notes here, whether these are written. I guess this last song was written by Pat Humphreys, and the Spanish lyrics were Karen Brandow. And indeed, Charlie King was the male voice. So that song was called We Are One, of course. So now we're going to dump to the police brutality civil suit press conference of Jeremy Porcha and versus Sergeant George and the Sausalito PD. This was recorded and videoed by John Doe 13K, I should say, by Wes White, on and posted on his John Doe 13K website. Here's some of the background. Well, you've heard a bit of the background from Wes White's prior interview if you've listened to the earlier part of this netcast. But here's some of what was stated, I guess. I think these are the legal proceedings, some of the legal documents. The First Amendment's protections for freedom of speech and of the press give journalists and citizens the right to take still or moving photographs from locations open to the public of events occurring in public settings, including any related police presence and activity. This well-established principle has been recently reaffirmed and strengthened with the passage of California Penal Law 409.7 on October 21st, last year, 2021. Such principles and laws exist to curb the unfortunate occurrence that, quote, when wrongdoing is underway, officials have great incentive to blindfold the watchful eyes of the Fourth Estate, i.e. the press. In too many instances, the police have swept up news gatherers and photojournalists as part of arrests typically made without probable cause for purposes of quelling legitimate protest activity along with the press's coverage of it. Journalists covering public demonstrations convened to protest government policies, including public outrage over police misconduct and racial, social, and economic injustice, have been subjected to arrest, seizures, detention, and physical mistreatment simply for practicing their profession. Courts have often had to remind the police that the right to film government officials, including law enforcement officials, in the discharge of their duties in a public space is a basic, vital, and well-established liberty safeguarded by the First Amendment. That's a quote from Redmond versus San Jose Police Department in a 2017 case. Gathering information about government officials in a form that can readily be disseminated to others serves a cardinal First Amendment interest in protecting and promoting the free discussion of government affairs. And that's a quote from Mills versus Alabama, and another one from the Fordici versus City of Seattle, some earlier cases from the 20th century. This case involves the unlawful, unsolicited, this is the one you're about to hear the audio of, provocation, arrest, beating, and seizure of photographic equipment, recordings, and media storage of an African-American journalist, Mr. Jeremy Porcha, by Sausalito PD defendant police officers George, Simigalski, White, and Doe's 1 through 10. Those are defendant officers. wherein defendant officers intentionally and violently suppressed Mr. Porci from documenting police activity at Sausalito's Marin Ship Park, the site of ongoing resistance and protest, in response to the city of Sausalito and Marin County's seizure and destruction of anchor-out boats in Richardson Bay. Such seizure and destruction has resulted in rendering its boat owners homeless and without shelter, having taken up temporary residence at Marin Ship Park. Despite having had countless prior exposure to Mr. Porci's ongoing engagement as a journalist when covering the events and ramifications of the city and county's heavy-handed campaign against the anchor-out community, defendant officers blatantly conspired to silence and blackout Mr. Porci's journalistic coverage by forcefully subjecting him to an intentionally executed provocation purposefully designed to provoke Mr. Porci's arrest and thereby excuse for applying excessive force. In connection with Mr. Porci's arrest, defendant officers seized his video camera and storage media, which, despite the district attorney's refusal to pursue criminal charges against Mr. Porci, Chief Rohrbacher, Detective Rose, and the SPD, that's the Sausalito PD, DOES, that is officers that are unnamed but can later be filled in, joined and ratified defendant officers' conspiracy by furthering its ends of incapacitating Mr. Porci's ability to perform as a journalist, in continuing to expose the city of Sausalito's contribution to the city's homeless population and otherwise utter disregard for its municipal obligations. In taking these actions, defendant officers, Chief Rohrbacher, Detective Rose, and SPD DOES 1 through 10 consciously and deliberately violated Mr. Porci's constitutional and statutory rights by intentionally obstructing his journalistic reporting on official police actions, undertaking an unprovoked and intentionally predetermined physical assault motivated primarily by Mr. Porci's race, fabricating criminal charges that were patently rejected by the DA's office, conditioning a baseless and unwarranted 10-hour detention, ordering a retaliatory retention of his video camera and protected recordings, and subjecting him to defend against a legally deficient and constitutionally infirm search warrant. It challenges the SPD and City of Sausalito's policy, custom, and practice of obstructing First, Fourth, and 14th Amendment rights of the press to gather, record, and disseminate news and information about events of public interest and of related police activity in public places. This case presents a blatantly disturbing example of the type of police misconduct directed at journalists that courts, the U.S. Justice Department, and state legislatures have repeatedly condemned. That's from the Civic Center Courtyard, Sausalito, California, February 21st, 3 days ago. And it's what accompanies the video, if you go to John Doe 13K, that's two words, John, J-O-H-N, and then Doe 13K, D-O-E 13K, and then look up police brutality civil suit, you'll find this description. And here you'll be able to see the video that accompanies the audio that now I'm about to play. Now, this initial dialogue is kind of hard to hear because of all the hubbub, but it gets better, I hope.
Like, how did you begin? Like, all of a sudden, what do you remember about that?
Yeah, so Jeremy was there filming. He was called in by one of the anchor outs, and he was filming, you know, just general every space stuff that goes on at the encampment. And, you know, boats and, you know, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. And Jeremy had set up, he was filming, and they apparently, you know, there was some dialogue exchange between him and journalists questions, and next thing you know, they retracted and sort of bumped up Archie White and Jordan, I believe, who also got the side. And then George's and was surrounding him, impressing himself against him. And then the part that I saw Sergeant George's lunge on top of the chair. He played mine, never matter. I'm sad to say that I'm from the Bay Area. I was born and raised in San Jose. And I came to Marin, Sausalito in particular.
So now we're going to be hearing a guy in a business suit. He's wearing a brown hat. He's African American, and he's actually speaking into a microphone, so you can actually hear him better. I think he's an attorney, but we'll discover that as we go.
Well, I want to welcome everybody to this important holiday. This is John Lewis's birthday, the champion of civil rights. John Lewis and I spent some time together in Selma, Alabama, and in jail. Also, we spent a month in jail in Jackson in 1965, and also from 63 to 65, we were in jail together in my hometown of Selma, Alabama, which is unfortunate. And the point today is that this is President's Day. A group of men who put together a very, very important document called the United States Constitution. In addition to John Lewis's birthday, this particular document is the mandate. And here we are 75 years later, from Selma to Sausalito, and we have officers like Chief Raubacher and Sergeant Georges brutalizing journalists as though they are criminals, when in fact it's the cops who are the criminals. I don't know if you've seen the video of what happened to Jeremy. Jeremy? Where are you, Jeremy? Come on over here. This Jeremy has been a journalist in this town and in Sonoma for the last 25 years. He's covered all kinds of incidents of public importance, and he was covering the homeless camp that's been created by the city of Sausalito. And I want Robbie to come and talk about what is going on and why this is such an important case of public importance. What is going on with the homeless here? Because this is the backdrop against which Jeremy was filming on the day that he was brutalized and criminally attacked by the Sausalito Police Department. So here is Robbie.
Thank you, Mr. Bonner. So here in Sausalito, there is an appalling disregard of the law by Sausalito Police, by the Richardson Bay Regional Agency that's been crushing people's homes, crushing people's boats out on Richardson Bay. And the festering abhorrence that this exclusive enclave has against working class people, against people that do not fit in to the exclusive pedigree of those who live up on the hill, has allowed corruption and police violence to fester on the waterfront. That the encampment Camp Cormorant is a result of the policies of the city of Sausalito and the Richardson Bay Regional Agency crushing people's boat homes on the anchorage without any due process of law.
Now, in case for some reason you didn't catch this guy's name, it's Robbie Powelson, and you've heard him before. I've interviewed him directly on this show. He's an activist, and I guess you heard Wes White talking about him as well. He's a strong organizer, and also has stood up to the police himself when they've inappropriately tried to intervene in homeless encampments that he's been involved with.
I've been, just from advocating, I've been arrested like 6 times, 7 times. I got a whole bunch of times where they filed charges against me to the DA's office. I didn't even know. I went to the DA's office. I have 4 no charges filed at the DA's office of criminal cases that Sausalito PD put onto me. I have 1 that in Contra Costa County where a boat was towed to a marina there illegally and destroyed, where I tried to intervene and was also arrested. Again, no charges filed. I got an illegal camping ticket down at and got choked out by Sergeant Georges for having a tent up. Again, found not guilty in absentia. Didn't even show up to my court date, and they found me not guilty. So
that's power.
Right there, they feel like they're above the law. And today, this lawsuit is going to start changing the tide, because now accountability is coming. And right now I have in my hand 1,800 signatures of people who are demanding that Sergeant Georges be removed. This is a dangerous cop. This is a violent man in a position of authority with a record of attacking people and getting away with it because John Rohrabacher just looks the other way, because the festering abhorrence that this city has against people that don't fit in is allowing cruelty to run the city of Sausalito. And with that, I want to pass it off to Jeff, who's not only he is a leader on the Anchorage, lives out on a boat, has also been suppressed as a voter trying to run for election in the city of Sausalito. He tried to run for the city of Sausalito, and they dragged his boat out into the unincorporated waters so he couldn't run for office. So there's voter suppression going on in the city of Sausalito. This is a national issue, and we're witnessing it right now. So here's Jeff Chase.
Thank you, Robbie Paulson. Really inspiring, and Charles Bonner and Jeremy Porcha, especially a real journalist that came to witness what started as a First Amendment demonstration and protest and has now become a FEMA jail. Good morning and welcome to Jubilito. The city of Sausalito is a legal fiction. It's organized on the cinders of Water Street. That was the headquarters of the Mariners that burnt down mysteriously on the eve of the city's incorporation 100-plus years ago. What this place really is inhabited by is flesh and blood, human beings, all equal in the founding documents. And especially in God's eyes, $1 billion is not a billion votes. If and when, which is the same word in Hebrew, the government of this town, the mayor, the city council, and the city manager are unelected, recalled, or resign, we can begin again. Jubilee is declared. That's freedom, that's forgiveness, and that's fruit trees, not war and poverty and pollution. We can start tying these government officials with their financial connections to the consultants and contractors, as well as the polluters and weapons manufacturers. They picked the wrong sailors to beat. We have and will again sail under the Golden Gate when we are ready, not serve as vessels to transfer loot, gold, and silver to a government and its enablers that is clearly out of control. So happy Monday, happy President's Day, and thank you for coming.
Yes. Thank you very much. Can I see the hands of all the people who've been brutalized, arrested without cause by the Sausalito Police Department? I mean, show the country on President's Day how your civil rights, your constitutional rights have been violated by the Sausalito Police Department, those very individuals who raised their hand and swore to uphold and defend the Constitution, have now become criminals and committing criminal acts.
And the camera swings around, and you see half a dozen to a dozen people in a crowd of about 30 raising their hands.
Against people of this community, and including journalists. And I want to bring on a journalist of 25 years in this community who was viciously beaten and seized, had his camera equipment seized, had Sergeant Georges blocking his camera as he was attempting to film the brutality against the homeless, been made homeless by the city of Sausalito, not Mr. Jerry Porgy.
And both Jerry Porgy and the man you just heard speaking are of darker skin hue, if that means anything in Lily White Sausalito.
Thank you all for coming out and showing your support and interest in this case. It's weird to be standing here in the middle holding the microphone. I'd prefer to be over there behind the camera documenting this, but, you know, I didn't make that choice. My choice was to cover this travesty, this injustice committed by the county of Marin and the city of Sausalito in the creation and they're creating homelessness, they're exasperating the problem and not doing anything to fix it. And when they attempt to fix it, they make it worse and they cover it up and they lie. And so that's a very compelling story. I was there just to witness this travesty going on, to tell the rest of Marin County what's going on here from a very, you know, honest look from the inside out, not the typical fluff piece on homelessness, and was silenced by the police department. Thomas Georges decided to make me stand here today and talk about the brutality, the injustice, and the corruption within the Sausalito Police Department. We have a police department, or a goon squad, whatever you want to call them, with no oversight. There is no oversight of this police department. And it's a sleepy town, Sausalito, who suspects corruption here. And so it's allowed to fester and fester. And it's the person to arrest, assault, and then they tried to lie about it. And, you know, not okay. So, not okay. So, you know, as a journalist, my intention is to draw spotlights on injustices, and that's what I'm doing. I set out to tell the story of homelessness, but here I am now talking about policing in Marin and corruption within the police department, which is something homeless people have had to fight for years, and people just didn't pay attention. And,
that's right.
You know, now that it's happened to me, I'm glad people are paying attention to, you know, the abuse of power here in Sausalito. So, thank you.
Right.
And we're going to take a musical break and then continue with the audio of this police brutality civil suit. The man you just heard speak, Jeremy Porgy, against Sergeant George and the Sausalito PD.
The sun over Georgia was gently ascending, and the beautiful bugler was barely beginning to demolish the dreams of the boys at Fort Benning, and the chef was polluting the plates. Corporal Cornpuff was humping his Hummer when the shriek of a siren disrupted his slumber, announcing a somewhat disgruntling number of civilians outside the gates.
Well, the coffee was bland and the speeches were blander as the squadron commander began to meander in the manner of Hannibal and Alexander, and the grunts were beginning to grunt. He said, "See the protesters infesting this sector. Well, men, let's begin exorcising the specter in the manner of Hector and Hannibal Lecter. These nuns are a menacing front."
But then Mimi LaValle and 100 nuns marched up Zuckerman Avenue, and the army commander put his head in his hands as he heard the proverbial thunder of shoes. And he spoke not a word, but the look on his face meant the whole army base better hide in the basement. Strategically speaking, there isn't a thing to be done. In the face of Mimi LaValle and 100 nuns. Colonel Cologne from the outermost reaches of the protest zone. He said, "I can't get a signal on my cellular phone, and I sort of suspect foul play." Colonel Cologne, he replied with a scowl from the tip of his toupee to the brink of his jowl. "Hey, only the army's allowed to play foul. Those protesters are gonna pay." And as the general's jaws clamped down on his denture, he said, "Bunch of grandmas for the state penitentiary. They look like deposits from the 17th century, and that's where the law's gonna send them." But then a soldier in camouflage stood up and stated, "But But your argument, sir, has been neatly negated by the fact that the army itself is outdated, so their demos are a perfect addendum. And then Mila Valley and 100 nuns came marching up Ingersoll Street. And as they were amassing round the school of assassins, the whole of Fort Benning turned white as a sheet. And Colonel Cologne was too tongue-tied to answer when Corporal Clone said, "We don't stand a chance, sir. All we've got are millions of tanks and guns. Whereas they've got Mimi LaValle and 100 nuns. Men were running like rabbits from those heroes in habits, and the sergeant was struggling to stare down the abyss, and the songs Mimi sung at the top of her lungs made the caisson song sound like Barney. The commander was mumbling, "Where do they come from? It's 100 nuns. What a nothing conundrum. So forget about the gunnery and get me to a nunnery. Oh, please let me out of the army." Less than auspicious, and the boys and munitions were becoming seditious, and the chief statistician and all the tacticians in strategic command had vamoosed. But they left a report whose conclusions were telling. If you sort of ignored all the grammar and spelling, it said passive resistance is strangely compelling, which none of us could have deduced. And when the sergeant screamed charge, they're surrounding the fort. A small silence got large as the soldier says, "Sorta, if you keep screaming orders, you'll bust your aorta." But the sarge disregarded his health. So when your army gets arduous, your skins get thin. Boys, I'm gonna discharge you as soon as we win. Put a lid on it, Sarge, we're not waiting till then. Why don't you handle this battle yourself? They unloaded his Uzi when they brought the bad news, so he wouldn't go shooting the bearer. Sir, all of the squadrons are quitting their quadrants, and the nuns are unleashing their pacifist terror. Well, the outlook was dreary, but it got even drearier when Mother Superior pierced the interior. And that was the day we saw the SOA overrun by a team of Mimi LaValle and 100 nuns. You can listen through the gaps in the distant thunderclaps as the general yaps at his men. He's saying, "Promise me, private, that we're gonna survive it." Is he down there talking to his privates again? "Private, either my brain's going mushy and moist, or they're cracking Fort Benning in half like an oyster. Can you get me their headquarters? Phone up the cloister. Can you tell me what this is about?" "Sir, I ventured outside and I spoke to a sister who put us on a listserv for war tax resistors. I was going to arrest her, but I'm getting a blister, so I think I'm gonna sit this one out." Well, the boys in the fort were dismantling the mortars when the corporal reported to the general's quarters. 3/4 of the fort would be following orders if you ordered the fort to surrender. "Because, sir, I assure you, you'll be disconcerted when you learn that the current cadets have deserted, and I've just been alerted that the colonel's converted and the sergeant's rethinking his gender. And the nuns are invading, and they're calmly persuading our commander to sign up as a monk. Also, Corporal Clone and I just started dating, and he's probably waiting for me in my bunk. So we're abandoning camp till the nuns overwhelm it. Sir, might I suggest that you tie-dye your helmet? You need a few colors and khakis as dull as it comes. But there's still army bases all over the place, so the real work has only begun. And they're saying Fort Benning is just the beginning. Tomorrow they're heading for Camp Pendleton. Corporal, give me your honest assessment before you go trading your vest for a vestment. Do you as a realist believe that this thing can be done by 100 idealists?" "Oh no, sir, 101. So the next time you see me, I'll be marching with Mimi LaValle and 100 nuns."
And that was one I've never heard. Mimi LaValle and 100 nuns. And that was written, I think, by Rick Burkhart. But it was sung, I think, by the Prince Mishkins on the album For the Record. Now back to the press conference.
Thank you for your bravery, Jeremy.
Yeah.
You are the creating spirit of freedom.
Yes.
To see you on your knees, to see these criminals over you, twisting your arm behind you, tearing your rotator cuff, was absolutely shocking. And they will answer for that. I'd like to ask the people here, though, what is it that you want? What is it that you have this petition? What is the petition want?
Justice.
Fire Sergeant George's right now.
Ready, you ready?
Fire Sergeant George's.
When do we want it?
Now.
All right.
When do we want it?
Fire Sergeant George's.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Fire Sergeant George's.
When do we want it?
Now.
What do we want?
Fire Sergeant George's.
When do we want it?
Now.
So in addition to that, which, you know, there needs to be discipline for his choices and action, and he's
you know, a commanding officer. So it shows you how high up the corruption goes. Really, what I'm after is change. Really, what I'm after is to ensure that...
This is Jeremy Porcha.
...and future generations are safe from the brutality of the police system, a system that has allowed Georgists to abuse people for years. There's references years old of him violating and physically assaulting people, and he's still employed by the police department. And then the system allowed an officer, a known liar, he's on the Brady list. They based their actions of seeking a search warrant to violate my First Amendment civil right based off of the word of a police officer on the DA's Brady list. Like, how is he an effective officer at this point? So I want change.
Yeah.
I want change. I want to ensure the safety of journalism, to protect the sanctity of journalism and the freedom of press to tell these stories and not allow governments to silence us.
How many journalists have been arrested so far in this country?
So I don't have that number offhand, but it's staggeringly, it's growing exponentially. 2 years ago, I think it was 54. I think the year before that, there was 154, or maybe 200, and we're at like 30 now. So the numbers are going up. And, you know, CNN, there was a reporter arrested live on camera by the police department. And we can't let this corruption continue.
Very good, very good. Now, when Georges and these other cops injured Jeremy, they didn't just hurt him.
This is the attorney-looking guy.
So I want his wife, she's also a plaintiff in this lawsuit, Amy, to come and talk about how this affected your family, as long with your daughter Mia, your daughter. Please come.
I'm Mia Porgy. I'm Jeremy's daughter. On November 30th, I got a phone call from my mom. She said Jason had just called her. She couldn't make out what he was saying, but she heard screaming in the back. She told me to keep my phone close because something didn't feel right. And if you know my mom, she says that all the time. And more often than not, things usually turn out okay. My parents spent a lot of time here in Sausalito at the homeless camp, where tragedies often happen, especially at the hands of police. I brushed my mom's phone call off, though. I thought to myself, Dad's there. He's documenting. It'll turn out okay. He's exceptional at de-escalating situations. I've seen it myself. I come back 5 minutes later to a text from my mom. Dad got arrested. I felt like many others that day, vulnerable, confused, and stuck. Stuck because Dad got arrested, Mom's at work, where do I go, who do I call? But stuck because my dad is often a safe ground, a voice of reason, and someone who can just make you feel okay. We later found out from videos that many of you have seen that the screaming in the back of the phone call was a violent, unhinged police officer tearing my father's rotator cuff in a vengeful and unnecessary arrest. As a family, we've had to come to terms with the fact that my dad is a victim of police brutality. We've all seen the videos on social media. We've heard stories from families who are not as fortunate to have their loved ones here to tell the story themselves. But never in a million years would we have thought that my dad would be the focus of those petitions and protests. We often get faced with the question, how can I help? What can I do? Well, Sausalito, you, as a city, need to come to your own terms. This is not just happening in big cities like San Francisco and Oakland with high crime rates. Police brutality is happening here.
Yes.
In your backyard. On the streets you drive to take your children to school. On the roads you walk on your Sunday strolls. It's happening here. So I beg of you, my family, begs of you to know what's happening in your community, listen, and be willing to hear the ugly, because it's fair. Thank
you. Yes.
This is Mr. David Anderson, my co-counsel. We are in negotiation with other cities in Marin County about police brutality. Here, Jeremy was filming while black as a journalist, and he gets beat up. We've had other African-Americans here in Marin County conducting their business in their own businesses while black. This hatred has metastasized across this country, and it has to stop. And I'm here to share a abolitionist with you, Mr. Dave Anderson, who's been fighting this fight with me in the trenches. He's also the attorney for the NAACP.
Thank you, Charles. Thank you, Jeremy. It is my professional and personal honor to have been invited by my good friend Charles Bonner to be part of Jeremy and his family's legal team. This is a just and righteous cause. For some reason, those that are charged with enforcing the law, they swear to it, they wear badges to it, they are here to protect the citizens of this country. Unfortunately, too often, those charged with enforcing the law become the lawbreakers themselves. They need to be held accountable when that happens. That's why we're all here today. Accountability. Fundamental obligation of any color, any belief. That's what we are supposed to do. When we do not learn the lessons of history, we are bound to repeat them. Mr. Bonner and I have represented two black shopkeepers over there across the bay in Tiburon, Holly and Yamakalit, who are still fighting their own cause for justice, freedom, equal treatment, regardless of color of skin or belief. And that's what we're entitled to. That's what we work for. That's why we live here. It's a fundamental right, but it is also a fundamental obligation when law enforcement chooses to violate their sacred duty of protecting you, you all, everyone who insist that we be treated fairly and equally. Charles, I look forward to our pursuit for justice. One more thing. I have lived here in Marin County for 30 years. My law practice is just down the road in Mill Valley. And I practiced for 43 years, and this is one of the more important cases that I have been honored to join your team. Thank you.
And now another song from For the Record. It's called Extraordinary Rendition, lyrics by Oliver Brown and Rick Burkhart, perhaps the tune as well, but I suspect Charlie King is singing it. And it's, well, here it is.
Lawyers and trauma psychiatrists. We fed them falafel and we read them their rights and played them classical music at a reasonable volume. And though they would never admit it, and they climbed aboard our hybrid bus, they were grateful we didn't come for them the way they would have come for us.
apartment, leading up to their trials for criminal neglect of most of humanity. They heard the charges, and on lawyers' advice, they reinstated the Fifth Amendment so they could plead it. And though they were rude and self-righteous, despite all they refused to discuss, they were deeply relieved we didn't question them the way they would have questioned us. Trial, though he called the whole proceedings unjust, he thanked Jesus we didn't sentence him the way he would have sentenced. We sentenced George Bush. It was a controversial move to put a proven war criminal in contact with kids, but the jury decreed it was apt that George Bush should work the rest of his days in an Iraqi orphanage. George Bush should work out the rest of his days in an Iraqi orphanage. Dick Cheney should work out the rest of his days in an Iraqi orphanage. Paul Bremer should work out the rest of his days in an Iraqi orphanage. George Bush should work out the rest of his days in an Iraqi orphanage.
And now a little bit more of the police brutality civil lawsuit press conference of Jeremy Porcie. And we'll probably be playing more of it on Sunday, perhaps, unless we get something a little closer to our local scene. But this is what I'd like to see happening locally to abuses that are happening in our police department.
My book there, The Tip of the Air, if you can hold that up. But in that book, there's a chapter I wrote called From Selma to Sausalito. And I've been living and practicing in this city since 1985, 37 years. I'm actually saddened and disappointed that my...
You're currently listening to Charles Bonner, and the name of the book is Tip of the Arrow.
My town would have a cop like Sergeant Georges and a chief like John Robacher who would abuse the homeless, who will create the homeless, who will abuse the journalist who's carrying out his constitutional First Amendment right to document the abuses. So this is very personal. So in terms of what Jeremy said, he wants change. You know, what this lawsuit is about that we have filed is about change. What change do we want? Well, the Constitution of the United States starts with we the people, not we the police.
Right.
Not we the Democrats.
That's right.
Not we the Republicans.
Yep.
Not we the congresspeople or the mayor. But we, the people, under this Constitution. We, the people, hire the President of the United States. We, the people, hire the Vice President. We hire all of our elected officials. So one of the changes we want here, basically threefold. One, we want all police contact with citizens who are not involved in conduct that's a threat to public safety to stop. There's no reason to arrest Jeremy, none whatsoever. First of all, Jeremy didn't commit a crime. He absolutely had a constitutional right to stand there as a journalist and as a human being to film. He had one of those inalienable rights to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's what our Constitution started with the Declaration of Independence. So the police officers violated that basic right. The police officers committed a crime. So the number one change we want is to see any human being that is exercising their constitutional rights, if there is a violation that the police officers perceive, then they can issue a citation and require that person to show up in court. There's no reason to arrest them or touch them at all. So no more pedestrian arrest, unless it's a threat to public safety. Number two, vehicle stops. People are dying across America because they have a taillight out. They have an air freshener hanging from their mirror. They have an expired license plate. There's no reason for us human beings as a species to be killing each other over such nonsense. So change number two. No vehicle stops unless it's a threat to public safety. We go through the Golden Gate Bridge. There used to be 10 or 12 people that we paid. We paid their 401ks, we paid a salary, we paid their health care. Now, when you go through the Golden Gate Bridge, is there any individual there? No, they take a picture of your license plate and you get an invoice. Unless there's a threat to public safety, no vehicle stops. Unless it's a threat to public safety, instead, cops can take a picture of the license plate, send a citation, just like you get from the Golden Gate Bridge, and a person appear in court.
These protections
are to protect the police officers. Yeah. We're going to call this the Jeremy Porgy Police Protection Act. This is going to stop police from endangering themselves and creating hostility towards the police, because the police are assaulting the people. And when the police assault the people, what will the people do? They will rise up. Historically, they have risen up, and they've taken over the government. That's why we got the Constitution, because the people in this country rose up against England. But the people that only take abuses for so long. Lastly, the third change. We want a police citizen review board with the power to hire and to fire and to discipline police officers, and they'll have a right of appeal. If we can hire the President of the United States, if we can hire the Vice President, the Senators, and the Congress, and the Mayor, if we can hire all these elected officials as the people, why can't we hire the people that we give guns and billy clubs and mace and instruments of torture? Why do we leave that to someone that we don't know who? That's not democratic. America now is the only country in the Western world, since Nazi Germany, where the people are afraid of the police. Shouldn't be that way. The police, our servant, we pay their salaries, they should be afraid of us.
They're afraid now.
And that is what's going to happen, my dear brother. Because this lawsuit carries out the mandate, the United States Constitution, to make sure that our First Amendment right of free speech, our First Amendment right of the press, our Fourth Amendment right to not be seized and searched illegally, and our 14th Amendment right to of liberty, those three important rights enshrined in our Constitution, that's the mandate. Now, these cops, they singled out the only African-American journalist there. There were women journalists, there were other men journalists. Why did they single out the only African-American journalist? Because they are saturated like a sponge with hate.
Yep.
Now, we know the antidote to this virus is love. But they won't take the vaccine. So we have to have the mandate, which is the United States Constitution. And that's what this lawsuit is to enforce the mandate. Okay, and so if anyone has any questions, yes.
Now, my name is Steve Seltzer. One of the questions is the attack on journalists, as you were saying, Jeremy, is San Francisco, Brian Carmody, the police went into his home, wrecked him and wrecked his equipment, grabbed his equipment. The question is why aren't the district attorney and Rob Bonner, the attorney general, enforcing the SHIELD Act in California, which is supposed to protect journalists? And the question, why aren't they? Because they're a clear violation of journalists' rights. Isn't that a violation of law that they're not enforcing the California law, which is supposed to protect journalists?
Absolutely. In fact, as recent as October of 2021, Governor Newsom signed into law another law to protect journalists. You shouldn't need another law other than the First Amendment. But the police officers continue to violate the rights of journalists. And that's why this lawsuit has to reinforce that right of journalists, reinforce the right of the First Amendment. So these laws are not being enforced, and because these particular officers committed crimes against Jeremy, we are going to take this lawsuit and first give it to the district attorney of Marin County to prosecute these cops for the assault and the battery and the false imprisonment and the torture that they did to Jeremy. Secondly, we're going to give the lawsuit to Rob Banta at the governor's, the California Attorney General, to prosecute these cops. And lastly, we will also give it to the U.S. Attorney, Mary Garland, to prosecute these cops. These cops committed crimes. And when you commit a crime, you go to jail. These cops need to go to jail. We are not going to tolerate this abuse again under my watch in my city as long as I'm an attorney.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's so exciting to that vision is so exciting, especially when we consider that single boat home that's been crushed on Anchorage, not a single person had a day in court to contest a boat being crushed, their homes being crushed, their possessions being crushed, being stolen by employees of the United States Army Corps, private contractors in San Rafael, stealing people's possessions after they've been evaded. So I wanted to connect that with some of the people from the Anchorage who are living under basically terroristic policies. And I just... Does that sound right?
Yes,
does that sound right? So I want to pass it off to Arthur Bruce and Bob Schulke. Arthur Bruce recently was attacked by an employee of the city of Sausalito, Urban Alchemy, and it sustained injuries, was sent to the hospital. I just want to hand it over to you, Arthur.
But that's all we have time for. I will be returning to this press conference to pick up Arthur and the other anchor outs for their stories about how their boats were seized and destroyed, probably on Sunday. So listen to the show again, or check it out when you can on the archives. That's at the HuffSantaCruz.org website. If you've got stories of your own about what's going on in Santa Cruz, because that's where we are, or the Santa Cruz County area broadly, or if you think it's relevant to what we're doing here, give me a call at 831-423-4833. That's the Huff Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom line, 423-HUFF. Thanks for listening. Talk at you again.